The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
How you doing over there? How's the weather?
Shit. Hey, come on. Not only am I in the UK, but I'm in Scotland. The place is deer and green for a reason. It gets wet a lot.
You know, every time I hear Scotland, I just start thinking like Doctor Who and Amy Pond. And
yeah, well, that's not a bad reference. I usually think of drunks. Or someone like Sean Connery.
Yes, how's it going there? Yes.
So, Sean, today you're going to be in Hunt for Red October. I want you to capture the feeling of the Russian commander on the ball. Let me hear your accent, Sean.
Yes, well, I was thinking of speaking like this.
It doesn't really go any further than that.
I'm sure he's kind of one-dimensional in that respect.
Yep.
All right, so if you're ready, we can get rolling.
I am indeed.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema and music. Tonight, Paul Logue of UK melodic metal band Eden's Curse and Ica Fries of the unclassifiable Dark Age on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Third Eye Cinema, your source for music and film that matter. Cult, underground, independent, and generally falling outside the mainstream corporate boardroom paint-by-numbers bullshit. Tonight we speak with a man whose band is noted for a truly international focus. With Germans, Italians, Serbians, and Americans all passing through the ranks, these UK-based, traditionally inflected metalers call to mind everything from vintage TNT and Yngwie Malmsteen to Journey. With a short but surprisingly busy year spanning a mere 7 years, they've managed to put out 4 albums, 2 EPs, and a single, while managing to a high level of quality and polish throughout. After a brief period of internal changeover, marked most pronouncedly by the loss of their original vocalist, the band is back and sounding better than ever with an even more dynamic frontman and stronger production savvy, big backup vocal-assisted choruses, and surprisingly uplifting, positively charged lyrical focus. It's no hyperbolic exaggeration to say this may very well be their defining moment on record. Join us as we speak to the irrepressible Paul Logue of Eden's Curse, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's the new improved Eden's Curse with Unbreakable.
Brother, why don't you take my hand? I'm a vision of a shattered man. I need your help to understand where we went. Oh, I'm tired of this place. We'll be right back.
talking metal, and we have with us a fairly young act out of the UK who boasted an international lineup with two Germans, two Italians, a Serbian, and a fellow American passing through its ranks. With a modernist take on traditional AOR-inflected 80s-style metal and a talented new vocalist, they've managed to put out what I can only describe as one of the most musically uplifting albums I've heard this year. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Paul Logue, bass and background vocalist of the band Eden's Curse. Paul, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Thank you, man. I thought you were going to see Dream Theater there.
Only 6 or 7 years and 4 albums, 2 EPs, and a single. You guys certainly don't believe in letting the dust settle.
No, we don't. And in fact, the truth is that we would probably like to have done maybe more, to be honest. I mean, it took us 2 years to put out the last album, but, you know, that was down to having a few singer issues, etc. So, yeah, we like to work very hard, put it that way.
Like I was saying in the introduction, the first thing that strikes me about this album is how emotionally uplifting it is. I don't mean all that shiny, happy bullshit, but in the sense that it actually touches something deep inside. You know, it's very up-tempo and aggressive while managing to give a feeling of strength. And too much music these days is dark in a sense of, you know, down-tuned, you got your head to your chest, depressed, mopey, like, you know, life sucks and there's no way out. You guys are tapping into more of the original metal zeitgeist where it's music to empower the powerless, to get people who are being pushed, motivated to push the hell back and not just stand there and take it, you know? So where is this coming from? What is this, deliberate?
Well, I don't know if in a sense it's deliberate. I mean, I think where we were as individuals or people, you know, through the last couple of years in terms of having a little bit of, you know, disruption in the band with our previous singer as well, I think that was the message that comes to the fore here. And I think really it was probably through the band members themselves speaking to each other and saying, come on, we've got a lot to say here. We've achieved so much in the short time we've been together. You know, one of the common themes that's given to us in the press is obviously because Michael was called Michael Eden, but it was a stage name that he adopted after we formed the band and named the band. So we were in many circles expected to roll over and die. And stop being Eden's Curse, but we created that name with Michael in the band at the time, of course, as well. Very proud of our past, but we move forward, you know, we look forward with excitement and real anticipation and a faith in what can come, because, as I said in an interview I did earlier on tonight, if you had told me, you know, if you'd have told the guy, you know, if he'd appeared in a DeLorean with some crazy-haired guy going, "Yes, that money!" and told me that in a few years' time we would open our fourth album with a 46-piece orchestra, I would have asked what you were smoking. If you had said that we were going to open for Dream Theatre in the United Kingdom and James LeBrie would be featured on our album, I would then be checking the contents of your boxer shorts at that point. So, you know, things happen in music and they happen for a reason, so you don't know what's around the corner. And we have a great faith and belief in what we do as individuals and as a band, the type of music we do. So there's no point in us really having that in our core and writing a whole load of depressing shit, because life is depressing enough for so many people. Sure. So write, you know, these songs come from the heart. They actually come from our observations on life. It can be something that, you know, maybe I see driving my daughter to kindergarten that day, or it can be a TV program I watch. But, you know, I have to have inspiration as a lyricist to write about something. And my poor darling wife, I say to her, you know, I'm happily married. I've been married for 15 years. But, God, I don't ever want to write a song about boy meets girl, because it's been done 1,000 times before. So we try and bring this air of positivity in the music. And so in a case that is deliberate, but I've never really looked on it as being deliberate. I think it just happens by you know, human nature and the way that I approach life.
Yeah. Because, I mean, directly, when I was writing those impressions down, Turn the Page came on, and there you were singing, you know, follow your heart and follow your dreams, don't let pretenders get you down, true to yourself, stick to your guns, never turn back. So it's not like I'm going far off track here.
No, you're not. And again, I mean, that's another song where, you know, the band members are talking to each other about, you know, the situation that happened with moving on from the last guy. And also there was a couple of personal situations that happened to, you know, someone in the band as well, which, you know, went hand in hand with of what we were writing about. So it can be translated into, you know, you could lose your job, it could be somebody who's lost a family member or gone through a kind of breakup, it could be anything. So a lot of people were finding, with this record in particular, are finding a lot of solace in the lyrics that we've written, and it can relate to their situations very easily. I mean, rock bottom's another one. How many people around the globe hit that rock bottom? It could be through depression, it could be through, as I said, you know, losing someone important in their life, or just life sucks. So these songs are positive in the sense of giving you a pat on the back and helping you escape from the daily grind, and we're so pleased to get feedback like that. I mean, that's better than anything you can get, you know, really.
Yeah.
That you're touching people at their core, and that's what you want to achieve as a writer.
True. And, you know, yes, seriously, while I get to hear a lot of music, and a fair portion of it is at least competent, if not downright good, the bottom line is I don't hear a lot of stuff these days that makes me feel good, like, you know, getting up and doing something positive, like a testosterone endorphin rush or something. and, you know, this album did, so it was notable.
Well, that's high praise indeed. You know, I'm hoping that maybe we can get it in a few gyms.
Keep on pumping on, buddy.
You know, so, great. I've got nothing but thanks to say to you. Very humbled by what I'm hearing.
Now, let's step back a moment, because you kind of tapped into this a bit already, but one thing I'm sure is on a lot of people's minds is here you are, more or less, you know, as I thought, named after the original vocalist, Michael Eden, and yet he's gone. So what was the story behind this?
Unfortunately, it was money. After we opened for Dream Theater, I don't know whether Michael's eyes started blinking around like a cartoon character with a dollar sign. I have no idea what caused it in his life, but certainly his main focus decided to switch from the music to money. And it took us 6 years to get to a point. You know, I hate talking about balance sheets, because at the end of the day, we're just a rock band. You know, we plug in, we play, we make a loud noise, and we have fun doing it.
Right.
But unfortunately, having, you know, an international spread that sounds like a kind of barroom joke, you know, that we have to, you know, you heard about the Serbian and the Scotland, you know, really it does. But coming with that is these travel expenses equivalent to the debt of an African nation. And it took us 6 years to get to that point where we had grown as a band. We came from an internet studio project to a fully fledged touring outfit. Here we were on stage with Dream Theatre in front of 5,000 people in the UK. And, you know, we felt really proud to where we had got in life and our career. And it was just going up and up and up. So at that point, our balance sheet was breaking even for the first time ever. That took 6 years, you know, a success story where they finally get out the red. But the honest truth was that when Michael came and said, right, I need this, none of us were getting any of that. And we said to him, dude, we are a team. We win, we lose, and we draw as a team. And, you know, not any collective member, Jesus, we're on tour with Dream Theater with Mike Mangini. If anybody can slap you over the head with a reminder about one man doesn't make a band, it's Dream Theater. So it was puzzling to us where he was coming from. And unfortunately, we just couldn't do it. You can't physically give someone something you don't have. And
yeah.
Mike just unfortunately refused to back down. He was told several times, no one wants you to leave, but it was his decision. And I mean, we all know what happened after that. He moved on, and so did we. So
right.
that's what Turn the Page is about. We decided, we talked about it for 10 seconds. Are we going to carry on? Absolutely. It's his decision. We can't change it. We've tried to talk sense into him, and he's made up his own mind.
Well, you know, I think you made the right choice, but we'll get to that. What was with Marco Sandrone, who was with you for the Time to Breathe single, and then he was gone too?
Yeah, well, that was embarrassing, but it was amazing singer, absolutely gifted, amazing singer, but unfortunately, the personality was just so wrong for us. The more we got to work with him, geez, you know, everything was a problem, he wasn't happy, we weren't happy, but when he sang, it was just, you know, forget about all the issues. So, I mean, he arrived into the band and had to be reminded that, you know, he was a fully fledged band member, but, you know, he was bringing in ideas, and the amount of ideas he was bringing forward was amounting to revolution, not evolution, you know. And, you know, Marco had to understand that there's five people in the band. We've been together for 6 years, and, you know, one of the first things he mentioned was about getting rid of the producer, and it was like, come on, you know, like get yourself in, sing the album, get accepted by the fan base, and let's look at evolving as a band over time. So there was a definite language issue there as well. And, you know, it was a tough decision we had to make. It was an embarrassment, but, you know, to be a success in this world, you have to face up to difficult decisions. And it was one we agreed as a team that this was just going to get worse the longer it carried on. And we had almost completed the writing phase of Symphony of Sin at that point. So we said, let's put a stake in the ground and just, we'll give the guy an opportunity to adapt into the way that we work, and if he doesn't want to take it, and he didn't want to take it, and that's it. We parted company with him. We parted on good terms because he is a nice guy. It just, his way of working wasn't conducive to what we are as a band, and vice versa. You know, he couldn't adjust to how we work. So we put that stake in the ground and rather embarrassingly come out and admitted that he was gone. And, you know, we got great support from AFM, who said, right, go and find yourself a new singer. Take all the time you need. Carry on writing your record. If you can start, you can start recording it. So that's what we did. So throughout the whole process of actually finding a singer, we were actually in the studio laying down the tracks for the next album. So by the time we had found Nick and got him on board, he arrived and the record was written, and we pretty much got him into the studio immediately to record the vocals.
Nice. Now, this is going back a bit, but you even had Steve Grimmett from Grim Reaper and Onslaught on one demo, which is Lost Soul. How did that happen?
Well, the drummer Pete was in Steve Grimmett's Grim Reaper. So at one point, the drummer writes a lot. Pete writes a lot for our band, particularly on this new album. I would have to say that the guy's been absolutely dynamite on the record. I think his drumming is the best he's done yet for Eden's Curse, but I think he's written nearly 90% of all the choruses that you hear have been written by Pete. And actually, all of the backing vocals you hear are sung by Pete. So he is a colossal talent. And he was writing Steve Grimmett's last album, which was the Steve Grimmett Band Personal Crisis. And that was mixed by our engineer, Dennis Ward, as well. So I think at the time, you know, I'd written the music for it and was needing a really good chorus, and Pete couldn't quite get up to the high notes that he wanted to pull forward on the actual recording. So Steve, luckily, was in the studio with him, and he said, ah, stick down a vocal for me. So that was how that happened, and it was just what we used as a guide vocal to let Michael hear for when we came to record it.
And, you know, I will say that in terms of all this vocal turnover on the plus side, and no offense to Mike, because he's a good singer, but Nicola Meade seems to be a bit more versatile of a singer. You know, it's not like both guys weren't good singers, but Mike seemed more like a Mark Slaughter or a Robert Fleischman type. You know, Nicola's more like a Steve Perry. There's more bottom end, a little more body to his high notes. So
yeah, I mean,
I'm impressed.
He's very versatile. I totally agree with you. I mean, I loved Mike's voice. I mean, there's no doubt that we wouldn't have worked together if I didn't like his voice, but there's just more to it. I mean, I would describe, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but, you know, Nicola is a singer, you know, he's versed in everything, and the technical capabilities of the boy are stunning.
Right.
And I think that you hear from, I mean, the first song coming out, The Gate Symphony of Sin, and you're like, I had to change my denims 3 times in the control room as I was hitting that high note in the vocal chorus. Stunning singer, can really sing everything that we gave to him, every idea, brought a lot of ideas to the table, and is just an immensely talented individual. I mean, just some of the anecdotes I can give you is that when I'm talking about a kind of part that he can stick on the end of a verse, and he's saying, oh, okay, is it a chord? Is it this? And I'm saying, what the fuck is this guy talking about? He appears in the control room, plinks around in the piano. Ah, that's what I'm looking for. Runs back in and records this. And I'm like, wow, that's impressive. Yeah. So there was a lot of kind of really cool stuff like that. And he's just a talent. I mean, one of my favourite kind of anecdotes is when we were actually auditioning him, you can give a singer a couple of old Eden's Curse songs to record, and you can hear how talented they are, but you don't really hear what they can truly do until you give them a blank canvas, and we did that with Evil and Divine. So he wrote some of the parts on Evil and Divine in terms of the melodies and how the chorus was kind of interpreted. I mean, it was Pete's kind of melody, but he took it to another level. And I think the original version we gave him out to record was about 3 minutes long, and when we got it back, it was 5.5 minutes long. So we then found out that he was a producer. He got his own studio in Serbia and actually records professionally for bands, and he's a live mixing engineer. So, I mean, guy is just bursting with the technological information to share with all of us musicians that we sometimes do. And, you know, it was amazing. And in fact, even some of his his original audition vocals for Evil and Divine made the album. They were so good that we said, well, why re-record that? It's absolutely killer, and we just lifted it off and put it in.
Nice. And, you know, speaking of this whole thing, Unbreakable is the sort of moving power ballad that you don't hear nowadays, particularly with Nicholas. It's sort of like an Irish tenor range, and it reminded me a lot of TNT in their prime. And I was saying that there's also more than a dash of Journey to the sound, at least in his vocals.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Tony Harnell was one of our favourite singers, and luckily we'd had a chance to work with him previously. He's a great guy. But yeah, I do hear that. The two singers that really stick out to me on several occasions in the record is Tobias Sammet from Edguy and Avantasia. I hear the same. And maybe if you do slash Bruce Dickinson, there's a little bit of that tone in there on some of the aggressive parts. And actually, I would say more Steve Ruggieri than Steve Perry. He's got the same tonal timber, right, if that's the correct word, as Steve Ruggieri, who's just a phenomenal singer. I mean, he can do everything. I mean, there's even moments when he's doing Devil in Disguise that you're thinking, fuck me, that could be Russell Allen there. You know?
Right.
So there's not many singers that can go from that. And really, I mean, Unbreakable, I think, is one of his showpieces. I think the emotion that he gets out, and that is such an emotive song for us. It's quite obviously about the split from Mike and us saying to each other, let's pull our socks up and carry on, guys. And, you know, we were translating that to Nick. He wants to come in and he wants to know what the song's about before he sings it. And that's just a breath of fresh air. I mean, you know, to convey it in a song, you have to know that. And I love that about him. He puts his heart and soul into every single lyric and every word and line that he recorded. And I think it shows, you know, some real hair on the back of the neck moments.
Right. And, you know, on the same theme while we're speaking of TNT, Wings to Fly, that guitar riff around the solo sounded right out of the Ryan Letico playbook, Circa Intuition. You know, that's nice stuff.
I think TK is in that league, you know. I think he's just a sensational player. And, you know, I'm quite excited because next Tuesday we're off to England to rehearse for our appearance at Firefest. So it's, you forget, because we're long distance, how good this guy is until you get into a room with him, or you get his tracks in the studio to upload for the record. I mean, he's just a monster player, although you do have to do a handstand to stand and watch him playing it, because he's got this left-handed guitar strung upside down, you know. So that's as weird as a box of frogs watching it, but by God, he can shred, you know.
And, you know, the background vocals are very important in your overall sound, which is also not something you hear anymore. It's very 80s AOR style, glam metal, yeah, in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I always like. I mean, I like everything from Journey right up to kind of Megadeth and all points in between, but I've always loved that huge sound that bands like Def Leppard probably did better than anybody back in the day, and then right, some of the 80s guys like Bo Hill and Max Norman and all these people really took it to a different level in many ways and made it a bit more natural sounding. So that's something that we've always worked hard on, and as I said earlier on, our drummer Pete is probably 90% of what you're hearing on this album. I mean, his nickname in the band is Eventide, and I don't know if you know that, but the Eventide harmonizer is a piece of equipment you can buy from a studio. I think you put one vocal in it and you program it and it shoots you out 8 harmony vocals. The guy's that accurate, and I mean, it's all completely sung live. There's no trickery to it at all. He's scarily good, actually, to be honest.
Wow. And, you know, I'm very impressed with how much that adds to the sound, because they're unusually well done in addition to being so prominent. You know, it reminded me, yeah, how much I missed hearing this kind of thing in music.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, they're as tight as a nun's chuff, so and that's important. I mean, if they are knitted well together, they come out even bigger. And I think Pete does sing for every single part. And so if you're breaking down a harmony thing, without getting too complicated, if there's like a 3-part vocal harmony, you've got your low, your mid and your high, he records 6 vocals for each single part. So by the time you get them back, you know, you've got, what, 24 odd vocals or whatever. And, you know, it just sounds huge, absolutely huge. I'm now doing my maths in my head to make sure I got that right.
For a band who harkens back to a very traditional metal meets radio-friendly hard rock template, you've got a fairly modern sound, particularly in terms of production. So are you actually all recording together in studio, or is this more of a virtual fire sale or Pro Tools?
No, I mean, yeah, because of the locations of the band members, when we first formed the band, we insisted that everyone has their own studio. That was a prerequisite to joining the band. There's no way that it could work otherwise. So we're all using digital, but Dennis, our mixing engineer, uses completely analog. So we're getting the best of both worlds. From his side, all he wants from us is a lovely, clean signal with next to no noise. And the one thing I'd say about all of the guys in Eden's Curse, I mean, their talents are also in the recording environment as well. I mean, Thorsten, you know, that guy has made it an art to record guitars. He's bought one of these huge studio porta. It's like a porta booth, kind of like a telephone booth. Right. But he's got a Marshall stack all in there and mic'd up. It's just, I mean, an insane amount of money it costs, but the end results are just to die for. And you know, when Dennis gets all of the tracks from us, they're absolutely crystal clear, and he can take that digital clarity and then begin to add warmth to it. So you're getting the modern technology coupled with the old school vibe. But I think he's a very modern producer as well. I mean, he's so, you know, if you look even from the first Eden's Curse records to the fourth, you can hear the improvement in production. And we've done the same thing. We've got better as producers and engineers in our own right, but so is he. That's the beauty, that he never stops learning, you know.
Right. And I was kind of baffled by the mix, because, you know, there's not a hell of a lot of reverb or room ambiance, but it's very crisp, like you were saying. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it hits you in the face like a sledgehammer at times. But when you've got the lighter moments, there's room for everything to breathe as well. So right. I can't speak highly enough of the guy. I just think he's astounding. And there's many great engineers out there. But Dennis is like a part of our little band family, you know. He's been there from the outset, and a lot of people wouldn't know this, but Dennis, you know, gave us a lifeline when we had no record deal and when we started. And I remember he kind of said to us, we were brought to him by David Friedman from Pink Team, and he said that David had told him that we were good guys and we had some great songs, and he said, okay, I'll mix your record. If you don't get signed, you don't owe me any money. And I'm like, sorry, what did you just say? That I could check with him that he wasn't bullshitting, but what an awesome gesture. And I said, just to check, can I actually leave here with the record even though we don't sign? And he went, yeah, no problem. Wow. And I'm like, wow. So he threw a lot in the line and put a lot of faith in us when we first started. And you've got no reason to get rid of a guy who continuously delivers results for you and knows the way you sound, which is crucial. We don't have to tell him anything. We just let him mix the record, and we do it by MP3 because he's so used to mixing Eden's Curse records now that we don't even need to be in the room with him.
And just tap into a few of the songs here. Devil in the Sky sounds a bit Yngwie, particularly with the outro there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's no secret that Yngwie is definitely one of Thorsten's idols. So, right. I mean, I think that comes out at least once every album.
And
I think probably last, that he has to go and lie down in a darkened room.
There were a few fairly grim news sound bites in Losing My Faith. What was that one all about?
Yeah, this one, in fact, I was sitting watching a documentary with my wife one night about the gang cultures in Juarez in Mexico, basically how the drug gangs had running the city, and the government and the police were completely powerless. And what struck me in watching this was how cheap the price of life was in the city as well. And it just really inspired me to write the song. And, you know, I really wanted to capture that vibe within there with some kind of news clips. So it took a while to find the right ones, but I think they're quite powerful. I love the last statement about, you know, every day in Juarez it's the same. The only thing that changes is the bodies. And it's a powerful song. And needed to be delivered with a powerful message.
And Sign of the Cross seems to be tapping into the same train of thought as Bad Religion's American Jesus, all about how religion's become bastardized by right-wing political agendas and painted with a stench of imperialism.
Really?
Praise be to Jesus.
No, actually, it's completely the opposite of that. At the time, that was written for David Friedman from Pink Cream 69. That was written originally for his solo album, but it never made the cut. And every time that we go to pick songs for Eden's Curse, the guys always ask me to include this. And for some reason, I fell out of love with it. It was myself that wrote it, but you know, this time it just felt right. They were all really saying, listen, this has to be on. It's got a great middle section, etc. But the actual, at the time of writing it, was when Pope John Paul died. So I wrote it because I dropped my wife at the airport and she was going to Rome with her mother. And a day later, the Pope died. And I thought, geez, you know, as long as I've been alive, I only remember the one Pope. So it's actually written from a perspective of, you know, who would want to take that job on? You know, imagine the enormous responsibility on your shoulders. And, you know, there's a couple of lines in it that's written from the perspective. So it's really about the Papal Conclave, really, but written from, you know, the outside looking in, that who would want the job. But there's four lines, I think, just before the guitar solo. Give me strength to do what matters, etc., which is quite cool. It gives you a perspective from the person, the lucky or the unlucky person, depending on your point of view. But that's what it was. It was just a time period in my life that my wife was out there, and I thought, wow, what a time to be in Rome.
And then you tap into the sort of bigger picture, metacognitively introspective territory that religion is supposed to bring us in the first place, in the great unknown. You know, I do another podcast, and one thing we talk about a lot is that we're so busy running in circles trying to make a buck or whatever that you lose sight of the bigger picture, what it means to be human and truly live. You know, it's like the rat race, and, you know, pity bullshit winds up blinding us to the fact that we're only here for so long, and there's a reason for us to be here in the first place. And, you know, like you pointed out there, you know, life's indeed what you make it. You know, faster and faster you head for disaster. Did you ever start wondering why your life's on hold?
Yep, and I think too many people sit around and don't really look at themselves and think, you know, you realise that the only thing stopping you from being you is you, you know, that we all have this ability within ourselves to make a better life. And, you know, there's many instances where our philosophy and outlook in life can really attract negativity to us. And really the whole point of the song is saying none of us know what is out there for us. But, you know, have faith in a better day. You know, really have faith in a better day. And if we all reach within ourselves and try and untap our true potential, whether, I mean, for me, I'm writing as you know, coming from a musician and a father and a husband and all that, and that's where my take is. But that can translate to so many different people, whether it's somebody in striving to be a musician or an athlete or just trying to live. You know, I think that can translate into so many people's lives, you know.
Yeah. So any tour plans you want to mention? Any plans to tour the States, maybe?
Well, this is something that we would love to do. We were lucky to play in Chicago in 2011 at Melodic Rock Fest. We got the offer to go there this year, but unfortunately at the time we were just finishing up the record, so that was taking all our priority. Yeah, we'd love to. I mean, there's no doubt we would come there in a heartbeat, and it's just a case that hopefully, you know, now having a kind of worldwide deal with AFM is finding the right package to get us over there, and we would be there without any doubt. So, I mean, as I said, put your faith in the great unknown. I said before, I remember we sat in 2009 and said, what the hell are we going to do with touring this year? And within 6 weeks, we had six rejections for tours, and then landed Stratovarius and Firewind.
Wow.
And even Scarce, a three-band bill, which was just amazing for us in the UK. So you don't know what's around the corner. So, you know, this band wants to play live. That's our aim for 2014, is to really take these songs out on the road. So we're hoping to do a UK tour in springtime, get into Europe in the middle of the year, and that leaves the end of the year free to basically get out to any other territories. So absolutely, if we can get over there and promoters can come looking for us, we'll be there.
So do you have anything you'd like to plug, or do you want to point your listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Sure. I mean, the listeners can check us out at www.edenscurse.com, and our Facebook page is facebook.com, and it's, you better check this actually, Eden's Curse Official. And we've actually just opened up a brand new fan club for North America. It's called Cursed Souls. If you check or search under NA for North America, Cursed Souls, Eden's Curse Fan Club, you'll find it there. But all of the links you'll get on our official website or our official Facebook. So thanks to everyone in North America for supporting us, and all the letters that they wrote to us during the last couple of years that pulled us through. And Unbreakable is for us, but it's also for everybody that helped us.
Well, with that, Paul, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you back to talk to your next album.
Absolutely, no problem. You don't even need to ask twice.
All right, so, you know, thanks again. And, you know, if you ever come over to the States here on tour, love to meet up with you guys.
Absolutely, mate, and pleasure talking to you. That was great fun. I enjoyed that, mate. Thank you for your time.
All right.
Thank you, mate. Take care now.
Take care. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. And to close out our interview with Paul, here's another one off Symphony of Sin. And it was a hard one to choose. I was really kicking around the idea of airing Turn the Page, which is a real showstopper in its own right. But this one's just saying so much more. So take a deep breath. Pull up your bootstraps and put on a brave heart, Tegan. It's time we face the great unknown.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Coming up next, Ike Fries of Dark Age, only here on Third Eye Cinema.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy the day.
Hi, this is Golf Minister. You're listening to the Third Eye Cinema.
To put some echo on that.
Greetings, pathetic mortal scum. This is Chris from Gloriana, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
That's my evil wizard.
Wow, that was great. Can you do one in the pirate voice?
Sure, I could be Captain Chris from Aelstrom if you want that.
Sure.
God, that's all I do is put on fucking accents all day long. Ahoy there, shipmates. This is Chris from Aelstrom, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Yar.
Wow.
I hate myself.
No, that was great. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
Okay, hi there. This is George and Thomas from Serenity, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema Show together with Team.
That's right.
Should we do it one more time? Okay. So, hi there. This is Georg and Thomas from Serenity, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, here's Matt Sinner of Primal Fear and Sinner, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey there, this is Marcos from Uproos, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy it.
Hi, this is Udo Dobson, singer of UDO, and you're listening to the show Third Eye Cinema.
Next up, a man whose band has been stumping away for 2 decades straight, gradually evolving from a straightforward black metal act to death metal to an unclassifiably melodic-based sound that incorporates elements of power metal, industrial, gothic metal, and more. With often dark and personal lyrics offset by a smooth, clean vocal approach over a driving modern metal backing, this is about as close to emo as metal gets. Join us as we speak to vocalist-guitarist Ike Fries of Dark Age, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first up, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Dark Age with Out of Time. Actually, let me play the intro first. Then you get out of time.
Hi there, this is Ike.
Hi, Ike, how you doing?
Hey, Gene, well, I'm really good, man.
So how's the weather over there? Where are you at in Germany?
We're in Hamburg, so pretty much up the north, and we had a lovely day, which is pretty unusual for us here in October, but it was really good.
Yeah, I mean, we had the same thing over here, so I guess it's becoming a global phenomenon.
Yeah, maybe.
So you're in New York City, just outside New York City.
Ah, okay, so my parents, they live nearby.
Oh, really? So your folks live over here, but you're still over in Germany.
Yeah, they moved there when I was 20. Yeah, some time ago, because, I got too much stuff here. I got my studio and all that and the band, so they moved to the States, and me and my brother, we all stay here.
All right, so I guess if you're ready, we can get rolling whenever.
Yeah, let's get it on.
Tonight, we're talking metal, and we have with us a man who's the driving force behind a rather unique band. Starting back in the dark days of grunge in 1994, he and his band have moved from a fairly solid black metal bass to a more death metal approach, finally arriving at a polished, synchronous, melodic sound that pulls from numerous disparate genres to create an ear-pleasing genre blend that's ultimately quite difficult to pin down. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming founding member, vocalist, and guitarist, Ike Fries, of the band Dark Age. Ike, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Thanks for having me, man. Thanks.
So my first question is, how do you classify your sound? Because there are strong elements of gothic metal mixed with some light industrial, touches of European power metal, and a strong undertone of emo as well. It sounds all over the place on paper, but in practice it works together pretty well.
Well, it's a really tough question. I think it's more dark metal or modern metal. It's really hard to classify that. But yeah, somewhere in between melodic death metal, still maybe if you go on by with the old records. I think it's kind of modern metal.
Afterlife in particular reminds me a hell of a lot of label mate Goth Minister, who I had a few months back. Have you guys ever crossed paths touring or what have you? Because you'd make a hell of a double bill.
No, actually not. Unfortunately not.
One thing that surprises me is your choice of names for the band. I understand you took your original name from Metallica song and Dark Age from a Vader one, but your sound and feel couldn't be further from thrash or death metal, whether we're talking at the inception of the band or more especially these days.
Yeah, I think it's funny because when we started out making music, you know, Metallica was or is still one of our favorite bands. And after, you know, that was the song Dire's Eve. And there was a band already with that name on the market. So we had to switch. And, you know, we had, I think it was MTV Headbangers Ball that showed the Vader video. And they have a song and a video called Dark Age. So, you know, I think I was 16 at age. And I saw that. I just went to my drummer and said, hey, what about Dark Age? And he said, yeah, that's cool. So that's actually basically the story about it.
So on that note, you've had quite a progression as a band. I mean, your earlier material is very much black metal in the more modern sense. You know, it's decent, but it's very different from what you're doing now. And then by the time we get to Silent Republic, you're pretty much doing death metal, at least in the vocal department. And then for the last few albums, you've been perfecting this more melodic cross-genre sound. So what was the impetus for such a radical change?
Well, over the years, I think musicians, well, at least we did, you evolved. You know, you get known to so many different styles of music. And for heavy metal, I would still call this my home. But, you know, back here in Germany, I work as a producer and songwriter and for other artists too. And, you know, I got in contact with so many different styles. So, you know, I found out there's a lot of to explore in, you know, in different themes, like goth metal, you name it, or even like more poppy stuff like Depeche Mode and all that. So, you know, I learned that it's all about the song, never about the genre. And actually, when we started writing for this record, we actually wanted to do a very old-school Göteborg melodic death metal record. And as we started writing songs for this, I have to say there's a little story that comes with that. And as soon as we had like two songs finished, which were really more heavy and aggressive, I took it to my car because that's where I always write lyrics for. I just put it in my stereo and just, you know, while driving, I try to find like hook lines and all that. And I always turn off my car stereo to concentrate on traffic.
Right.
I found out that, you know, I actually did not want to listen to that kind of stuff. So I was calling my band members and, you know, telling them, hey guys, you know, this really won't work. It doesn't feel natural. So we, you know, we hooked up at the rehearsal room and we started to think all over and said, man, we should not try to please a certain genre. We should just write what feels good. And that's what we did. And then actually the opener for the record, the song Nero, that was the first one I wrote for the record.
Wow. Yeah, and it really works well. I mean, you're right about it. You don't want to really be tied into, you know, a lot of bands do that nowadays. And I came up in the 80s, so everything was brand new. You know, it was like five bands doing one thing, and that was it, and every one of them sounded different. But, you know, now you've got bands, and you got 25 that sound like Carcass and 27 that sound like Gorgoroth and whatever else. So you're right. It's good to not just be tied to a specific genre. And it's clearly working out for you guys because I like what I'm hearing.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Seven albums, an EP, and a live DVD isn't all that much material to show for a steady 20-year career, which mostly, I think, comes down to a long string of demos and personnel turnover early on before you got signed for a full length. And more recently, a four-year break between a CD and A Matter of Trust. So what was going on during these two periods? Why so much turnover at the start of the band?
Well, Yeah, there were certain things that got us there, right? You know, we were, so the first five records, we were always working with one record label. And between the fifth and the sixth album, which was between Madness Exorcist and Acedia, we were searching for a new label that could bring us to a higher standard and to reach more people with our music. So that took a while. That was the first longer break we had. And after the record that is before the new one, A Matter of Trust, we had kind of a baby pause. My keyboarder and me, we got children, and everybody, I think, who got kids knows that, you know, you have to be at home in the first year. So we took a little break from that and needed the pause to kind of, you know, settle down a little bit. And after we have, but now, you know, kids are learned to walk, and now we're back again, and, you know, we're heading with full throttle for the next level.
Right, but even back at the beginning of the band, when you guys had so many people coming in and out of the band and all those demos you were doing, what was going on then?
We had, actually, it wasn't so many. We didn't have that many personal changes with musicians. I think from the first demo, the guys changed, that was all in 1 year. We had the guitar player that's being changed to Jörn, who actually was then part of the lineup from the first record, The Fall. Since the first record, The Fall, which was the first official record we did, that is 17 years ago, we only changed our bass player. So
true.
This band actually, after 18 years, is still the same, besides the bass player who came to the band with the record Minus Exitus. So, yeah, last 18 years has been a pretty steady lineup. We just changed one person.
But again, what's most fascinating about you guys is how deftly you shift between genres. I mean, one minute you remind me of, say, My Chemical Romance, the next Goth Minister, and the next Nemesis, and yet there's a very traditional metal feel holding the whole mix together. So where are you pulling all this from?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think maybe it's because we are really influenced by so many different styles in metal. I mean, you know, we grew up with of course, all the standards. We grew up with Sabbath, with Metallica, with Maiden, all kind of that. And then, we learned, and there were all new genres coming in with black metal, death metal, you name it. And right now, you know, here in Germany, I have a recording studio. I work as a producer. I earn my money with that. And I learned to listen to so many different styles, even not metal music. And I learned that it's all about the song. And maybe it's just the experience from writing. I do write for other artists too, and maybe it's just the feeling for a certain, it's hard to tell, but yeah, I think the songs need to tell a story, and I think the vehicle that the song is being transposed isn't that important, actually. I think if you want to do heavy music and metal, I mean, yeah, just grab different styles and try to work a good song. I think that's what we did. We didn't really think about serving a certain genre. We completely do not do that.
Now, I've also heard you described as an electronic power metal band, which is a bit strange in and of itself. Because, you know, when I think electronics, it's either something akin to drum and bass or more of a Tangerine Dream meets Amandul approach.
Yeah.
So what were you trying to get at with labeling yourself that way?
Oh, that's funny, because the first time I'm hearing that. Yeah, and I totally agree. It sounds a little strange to me. I don't know. I think maybe because maybe that's something the label did. Because this time, you know, this record we have more like keyboards and electronic stuff than ever before. So, and the power metal stuff, I don't know. Of course, I've been listening to a lot of power metal bands too during my career, like the Gamma Ray and all that kind of stuff. And we toured with Primal Fear, but these are not our roots.
Right.
Not at all.
Exactly. And the thing I keep picking up in your sound is emo. I mean, good emo, mind, but it's coming from there nonetheless. You know, somewhere between like an AFI and a Hawthorne Heights, I guess. I know it's partly the scream backup vocals, but also in the emotional intensity and this palpable feeling of despair in some of the music. But at the same time, you still manage to keep things fairly up-tempo, melodic, and catchy. It's really hard to describe your music.
Yeah, I don't know. From the emo side, yeah. I mean, we've been listening to some of those bands, like My Chemical Romance, Under Oath, and all that. I think that always came with our music, but actually has more of the roots in the black metal, and I mean more the Norwegian black metal, is the desperation we have in what we do and the melancholic side.
Right.
No, we do not make fun, like happy music. You know, happy music makes myself sad. I get sad from happy music. So That's the only thing we can do, I think, with the lyrics and all that. You know, I've been always listening to bands like Paradise Lost, and the feelings they transposed on every of the records, even the more poppy Depeche Mode ones. I always loved that, and that they've been a huge influence on us. So maybe that's kind of a point where the desperation comes from.
You have an interesting take on today's youth and dark signs. So tell us a bit about that one.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I had a situation in my family where one of the teenagers in our family, she had some really health issues with on the psycho side. She started to cut herself with a knife, and it was a really, really sad story. And, you know, I was thinking of our generation right now, and I know every generation, they have their own disease, but I think this generation really struggles with all the pressure that has been put on them. There's so much information going on, and everybody, it's been told that everybody's going to be the next whatever, and you're going to be the next superstar or the next Google inventor, and you basically have to earn a lot of money to buy stuff you don't need and all that. So I was thinking to myself, what do you want being like 16-year-old, and you know, you cannot deal with that kind of pressure. So I was thinking of doing a song where, you know, I think that kids, they always give signs to the grown-ups to show that, man, I'm ill. I do not feel good. Yeah, I want to do a song about that. And it's basically that we as grown-ups, you know, we have to be aware that we recognize these signs that kids are giving if they're not, you know, if they're ill.
It's interesting because, you know, you are touching on things like the drive towards suicide and the rise in teen suicides of late. But then you have that interesting line in there where it's like, we've got the dark sign. You're saying that we're all evil. And, you know, even at my age, and I'm not that old, I notice that I find that sometimes it's like, well, you know, these kids today, they're all kind of messed up. You can see it on the news or whatever. And, you know, that's not really fair because, you know, I was there once too. And, you know, we're all the same human beings. We come in at different times in world history, but it doesn't mean we're all insane or, you know, evil. You know, I really, when I heard that lyric, I'm like, well, this is really interesting. It made me think. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's good. I totally agree on the fact that, I mean, being a little older with the experiences we have, I think that everybody, every human being, we all have our dark side in ourselves. And I think at a certain point, it's good to know your dark spot in your soul. You know, I call it the dark spot that we all have. And there are definitely situations in life where you always are kind of, you have your meeting with these dark places in your heart. And I think that comes up with pressure. It comes up with fight, arguments, and being unsatisfied with what you do. And yeah, I think we all need a kind of a breakthrough method to get out of that. I think that maybe dark signs even tell this story because, you know, for myself, I can only speak of myself. You know, I've been a really frustrated kid being a teenager and starting dark age. And still, you know, although I know I've made my experiences, I still have to say that sometimes, you know, I still, if I listen to certain music or I can bring in a certain mood, I still sometimes have that same tragedy in my heart that I felt these days.
Right. Now, Nero doesn't seem to have anything at all to do with the overweight fire-starting emperor of yore. So what were you trying to get at with that one?
Well, Nero, as the name will maybe say, it has nothing to do with that guy burning down Rome. It is about the color, it's about the color black, actually. And it has to do with loss in your life. So maybe I just wrote a lyric when you lose somebody that you really, 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 that has really been a big influence on your life. It could be your wife or a best friend or your dad or grandpa. That doesn't really matter, but I just wanted to write a song about this numbness that you have when it just happened and how you feel and you have to try to get over it. Because at first, you know, you're not really sad about anything. You just feel numb and like there's nothing. You feel lifeless. I just wanted to make a song about that feeling, trying to get over it and, you know, find your way to sorrow. Because I think that, you know, sorrow can help getting through these times. But first, it really sometimes it's really difficult to feel sad.
Exactly, right? It hurts when you're there, but it's sometimes it's necessary just to grow as a person and get through things. So, yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Now, I understand that Remedy is releasing your very first record, The Fall, again in a few weeks, almost in conjunction with your current release of A Matter of Trust on AFM. What's the story behind that one? Because, you know, the two couldn't be more far apart stylistically.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think it's kind of a clever thing to do for them. Because right now, you know, we get a lot of attention for this record. I think, you know, we had that deal going on back then in the days. They said, okay, we're going to let you out of the deal, but we want to re-release The Fall with a better master. So we were remastering it.
Right.
And because, you know, that sounds a little dated. So I think they're just trying to get the wave that we're on there right now. So I think it's, you know, musically, of course, it's nonsense, but why not? I mean, yeah, if the people can have a better product, I mean, why not?
So you were actually involved in the mastering yourselves?
Oh, yes, we remastered ourselves because, yeah, we thought it was the best thing to do.
Any tour plans that you guys want to mention? Any plans to tour the States?
Right now, we do not have any plans with touring the States, but we are working on it because now the response has been so good. We just signed a deal with the biggest booking agency and promoters here in Germany, so we're working on a European tour for February and the festival season for next year. But since the response from the U.S. has been so huge now with interviews, because I've been doing interviews today with U.S. promoters now for 5 hours, so
wow. It's
really unbelievable. And so, yeah, we are working on plans, and everybody behind the management is now trying to get contacts into the States to have a tour there. So luckily, we're going to do that.
Great.
Hopefully.
So do you have anything you'd like to plug, or did you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I think, you know, it's always cool to check out our Facebook site or website, which would be facebook.com/darkage or dark-age.de. So, yeah, check us out there, and you will get some tour dates and shows we're playing, and, of course, you can have a look at the merchandise and all that and get the latest news we're putting out.
Well, Dad Aka, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you back to talk to your next album.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me, and we really appreciate the support, man. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, and have a good evening. And, like I said, if you're in the area, I'd be glad to have you back on and chat with you again.
Great, Gene. Thank you so much, and we'll surely let you know. Okay, take care. Bye.
And to close out our interview with Ike, here's another one off A Matter of Trust, which has nothing to do with overweight decadent emperors with a noted love for the arts and a propensity to play with matches. This is Nero.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Paul Vogue and Mike DeFries. In the future on Third Eye Cinema, the Indie Directors Roundtable with Mark Maloney and Tim Ritter, legendary death metal guitarist James Murphy, and Ron Keel. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician and like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience.
Up to 70% off. That's right, at Court Furniture Clearance Center. Get up to 70% off new retail prices and choose from a wide variety of previously leased furniture and decor for your home or office. Sofas from $199.99, bedroom sets from $399.99, dining sets from $299.99, and more. All items are Court certified, guaranteed, and in stock, ready for delivery or to take home today. Make the smart choice and visit one of our five locations in the DMV or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com. Mention Radio 20 and get 20% off.